Good morning, it's 8 a.m. and this is regional news for the Western Slope. I'm Travis Bubinick. The Grand Junction Daily Sentinel reports a Cedar Edge man accused of manslaughter in 2012 and awaiting sentencing died last weekend in what authorities suspect was a suicide. 49-year-old Billy Kistner pled guilty to charges of manslaughter in the death of his wife in 2012 but was released on bond. His death came just hours before he was scheduled to appear for sentencing in Delta Combined Court. According to the Daily Sentinel, Delta County Sheriff Fred McKee and Cedar Edge Police responded to a report of Kistner being found lying on his driveway with an apparently self-inflicted gunshot wound. McKee said evidence at the scene was consistent with suicide and that the case is essentially closed unless more information becomes available. Kistner in 2010 told authorities that he had found his wife unresponsive in a hot tub at their home, but that he removed her body before police arrived. He was later arrested and charged in May of 2012 after his family presented new evidence to investigators in the case. Permits for oil and gas drilling and mining on federal lands in the Rockies are being put on hold by the federal government shutdown. According to the Denver Post, applications for new permits have been piling up in Bureau of Land Management offices, and federal oil and gas lease sales could also soon be affected. While companies usually have to wait a year or more for permit approvals, industry officials say they're concerned the shutdown could delay the already slow process even further. The Wyoming Petroleum Association's president said he's expecting backlogs of permits and actions to move those permits forward. A spokeswoman for the National Mining Association told the Post the coal industry could see similar delays. Meanwhile, environmental studies looking at oil and gas development on federal lands are also being put on hold. The Post also reports that a question over what's been termed personhood will appear on the 2014 state ballot. Voters will be asked to include unborn fetuses in the state's definition of person and child, as outlined in the Colorado Criminal Code and Wrongful Death Act. According to the Post, the group Brady Ministries gathered enough signatures to put the measure on the ballot. The question will appear as Amendment 67, and if passed, would mean unborn fetuses could be recognized as potential victims of violent crimes. The proposed amendment stems from Longmont resident Heather Surovic, who was 8 months pregnant with her son Brady when she was struck by a drunk driver in July of last year. Her unborn son didn't survive the accident. Surovic pushed for a homicide charge to be filed against the man responsible for the wreck and the death of her son, but no charge to that effect was filed. That man, Gary Sheets, did plead guilty to 2 counts of felony vehicular assault and driving under the influence, but as the Post reports, he was found dead in a Denver motel before he could be sentenced. Opponents of the measure say it deceives voters into thinking those responsible for crimes against pregnant women often aren't charged. The group Planned Parenthood Votes Colorado says that isn't the case, citing the Crimes Against Pregnant Women Act passed this year. That law sets penalties for crimes that lead to the loss of an unborn child. Similar personhood ballot questions were voted down in Colorado in 2008 and 2010. Think back to the last time you ordered a lamb chop at a restaurant or bought a brand new wool coat. Chances are it's been a while, and you're not alone. People are eating less lamb and wearing less wool these days. Over the last 20 years, the number of sheep in this country has been cut in half. As KUNC and Harvest Public Media's Luke Runyon reports, there are many reasons behind the decline of the American sheep industry.
Recent rains washed up the roads to Albert Villard's sheep herd outside Craig, Colorado, in the northwest corner of the state, so he's taking the day to mend some fences.
I tried to shear down on the winter country.
This is a busy time of year for Villard. In a few days, he'll start herding up his sheep, taking some to feedlots, and the others he'll shear for wool. After a couple years of drought, a handful of harsh winters, and fluctuating prices, Villard's herd is at its lowest point in a long time.
The numbers are just way down. And less sheep ranchers, just in general.
Some sheep are raised for their wool, others primarily for food. The industry's contraction has been happening since the late 1940s, on a decline of a few percentage points every year, leaving ranchers like Villard to wonder, when are we going to hit the bottom?
The industry as a whole, I think, is trying to get the numbers up, but there's so many factors as to why. I don't think you can blame any one thing.
You can't blame just one thing. The decline is the result of economic and cultural factors coming together. Take clothing, for example. If you look at your tags, pieces from your wardrobe are more likely to be blended fabrics, nylon, rayon, and polyester. As synthetic fibers have become more prevalent, you're wearing less and less wool. I'm standing here at Double J Feeders outside Ault, Colorado, which is just one of a handful of lamb feeding operations in the country. There are thousands of sheep. I mean, it's basically all I can see from standing here. The feedlot can hold up to 50,000 sheep at any given time. Here, they bulk up and are readied for slaughter. Jeff Hasbrook is the owner. He says 30 or 40 years ago, lambs played an important role in the small family farm.
Every farmer in the wintertime would buy 1,000 lambs, run them out, you know, and on the beet tops, corn, whatever, and then they'd market those lambs in the spring. Well, all of that has changed.
Hasbrook's feedlot is part of a massive co-op that markets lamb to meatpacking companies and locks in prices. But the lamb and sheep industry is still wildly volatile. Price swings are the norm. The co-op's manager, Brad Anderson, says when risk is too high, ranchers tend to bow out. Another problem that's plagued the industry is lamb's perception by the average consumer. Anderson puts the blame on the meat fed to soldiers all the way back in World War II.
Those troops were fed canned mutton, and when they came home, this, no more lamb, no more sheep, don't eat any of it. And that's where we saw the steady decline.
The steady decline started at the same time production of beef, chicken, and pork all got way more efficient. Lamb couldn't compete. So while cattle research has turned beef production into a well-oiled, highly profitable enterprise, Anderson says the same isn't true for lamb.
We deal with just a percentage of the budgets that other proteins have for research. And so it's very, very tough to get that kind of research and be able to get that information to the producers.
But there is hope for sheep producers. Because many operations tend to be small, the growth in farmers markets and local food has benefited sheep ranchers. National Sheep Industry Association Director Peter Orwick says there's plenty of room for growth in big cities, too.
It's ethnic communities. Every major metropolitan city in the U.S. has a large immigrant neighborhood. Where are the people coming from? Where they prefer lamb. It's their meat.
Back at Albert Villard's herding pen in northwest Colorado, he's focused on the upcoming year. Prices have risen recently. But coming off a drought, Villard says, he expects to see even more of his neighbors dropping out.
A lot of guys might liquidate because they don't want to fight it anymore. So, which from my perspective, because I need to buy more sheep, might be a good thing.
A good thing for him to build up his herd, but with fewer young ranchers joining the ranks, a bad piece of news for an industry shrinking every year. I'm Luke Runyon, Harvest Public Media.
Harvest Public Media reports on farm and food issues and is a collaboration of KUNC and other public media stations in the Midwest. You can find more stories or comment on this one at harvestpublicmedia.org. Critics of Colorado's oil and gas industry recently gathered in Glenwood Springs to offer their views on how the industry is affecting air quality in the state. As the Glenwood Springs Post-Independent reports, one speaker there said at least one violation of state and federal safety limits on ground-level ozone has been found near Rangeley in northwestern Colorado. Another claimed chemical emissions from oil and gas operations could be worse than reported by the industry and the state. Jeremy Nichols of the group Wild Earth Guardians presented his claims that emissions in Garfield County mainly stem from natural gas storage tanks and leaks. Teresa Kuhn of the state's Air Quality Control Commission also spoke at the event, saying the commission plans to develop ways to more closely regulate air pollution. Kuhn said that process has been underway for over a year now, and that formal rulemaking hearings should take place next year. Endocrinologist and environmental health analyst Theo Colburn of Paonia didn't attend the meeting, but did send in pre-written remarks, in which she said air quality monitoring wasn't performed on the Western Slope before the boom in natural gas drilling that has now lasted over a decade. Colburn said citizens' concerns about potential health effects from long-term exposure to ground-level ozone, quote, could very well be real. According to the Post-Independent, Garfield County's oil and gas liaison attended the event but didn't speak. Oil and gas industry representatives also didn't offer any comments at the event. Remember to post your observations, photos, and videos of changes in the season at thealmanac.org. The Almanac is a part of KVNF's crowdsourced climate reporting project called I See Change, one of the many unique experiments in radio journalism going on across the country. For KVNF News, I'm Travis Bubinick.